Bill Best, former professor, coach, and administrator at Berea College for 40 years, began farming and preserving seeds more than 50 years ago. He has just authored a book, Saving Seeds, Preserving Taste, Heirloom Seed Savers in Appalachia. And it's about the history, cultural traditions, and people associated with seed saving. It's my pleasure to welcome to Around Cincinnati Bill Best, who is calling from his home near Berea, Kentucky. Welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you, and I'm glad to be here.
Bill, what seeds do you focus on in the book, and why?
I focus mostly on beans because they've been such an important food staple in the southern Appalachians, well, for hundreds of years, with the Indians certainly before the Europeans became involved as well. I focus to a lesser degree on tomatoes because they came in later and they don't have quite the food value that the beans do, because the beans were dependent upon as a protein food. Then I focus a little bit on cucumbers and the candy roaster squash, which we, if I understand it correctly, inherited from the Cherokee, which is still grown by the Cherokee, North Georgia, Western North Carolina, East Tennessee, and then lastly on apples, just hundreds of apple varieties in the mountains, many of which are still there, and one grafter in particular who is keeping the tradition of grafting going and rescuing a lot of the endangered apples from extinction. And of course, we're all working on keeping the seeds that are in the book from extinction.
You mentioned candy roasters.
It's a winter squash that gets up to 50 pounds and very long. It's long and narrow. And when I was growing up, we grew pumpkins for jack-o'-lanterns and cattle feed, but we grew candy roasters for human food. In my home community, that's still pretty much the case. They have a much better taste than pumpkins do, in the opinion of the people of the region. And they're sweet. And now with the advent of refrigeration, a lot of people will cut them in cubes and put them in plastic bags and have fresh pies and cakes all winter long, all year long.
Bill, why is it important to save seeds?
We can't afford not to. That is the main thing. We've got to maintain genetic diversity, and the seed companies are certainly not going to maintain genetic diversity. They're going too much into gene modification and transferring genes from one life form to another, and with a lot of unintended consequences and with a lot of unknown consequences. So I think for thousands of years, we've depended on people to save their own seeds and family, region, country, whatever. And I think it's very important that we keep doing it. And the seed companies, which are mainly owned by the multinationals now, and they have rid of themselves of thousands of the older varieties, including many of the early hybrids, which were bred for nutrition and flavor and texture. So we've got to grow food for something other than shipping and shelf life. We're going to have to start growing food for nutrition and flavor again and health.
Is it something that's very hard to do, difficult to do? I mean, could anybody save seeds if you've got a garden?
Anyone can save seeds. We've just gotten out of a habit. And, of course, if you skip one generation, you sort of have to go back and learn it all over again. Of course, I grew up learning it from day one. I mean, seed saving was such an integral part of everyday life that I never gave it a second thought. But then when I had my first garden in 63, 50 years ago, actually 51 years ago, I guess, I bought my first commercial seeds, and I was in for a rude awakening because the beans were so tough, I couldn't believe it. And then my mother gave me some when we went home that fall, and that got me started over again, and I've never looked back. I think it's very important to do, and my granddaughters are saving seeds now, two of them, and I've got a couple of great-grandchildren who are also growing and saving their own bean seeds as well. It's easy to do once you come into it, and I think it's important to get young children saving seeds because they get associated with electronics very quickly, and electronics, everything is instantaneous, but with the seeds and the sprouting of seeds, it takes a little bit longer time, and I think we're going to have to develop that part of our psyches as well.
That first garden you planted in 63 has brought you now to being a founder and director of the Sustainable Mountain Agriculture Center, which is near Berea, where you live. What is the mission of that center? I mean, obviously, this has taken you on quite a journey.
We are making use of modern technology in the sense that we're pulling in Southern Appalachian beans over the internet from throughout the United States, and we are shipping them out to all 50 states. We sent some to Hawaii just yesterday. We've sent them to Alaska, where they grow them in hot tunnels. And I've had beans come back to me from many, many states, especially Washington, Oregon, Minnesota, and across the northern tier of states. And we're growing them and redistributing them. We grow about 100 varieties a year of the probably close to 700 varieties I have now. But I'm going to try to get more people involved and maybe try to get a grant to hire a full-time person to work with us on this, because I can't depend just on interns during the summer. Mm-hmm. My grandson, he's 22. He's worked with us 10 summers. He's still in college. But I'm going to have to pull in some more people if I can. But we also host a seed exchange the first Saturday in October, which everyone's invited to. We don't advertise it much, but we have typically over 100 people from 10 states, and I'm anticipating a lot more this year because of the advertising, the publicity that we have this year. And the book, I think, is going to bring a lot of people in.
Well, I love the name of some of these seeds that you write about. I'll share some. The Franklin Greasy, the Brown Goose, White Case Knife, Aura's Speckled Bean, and I think my favorite is the Radiator Charlie's Mortgage Lifter. Now, how did heirloom seeds earn their names? There's probably a different story for every one, but
there is a different story for every one. And in the case of beans, I think most new beans come about through mutation or a cross, then breeds true. I think the important thing is that it breeds true. A lot of beans have variants, and then they're known by as a variant of a particular bean. For example, the turkey crow bean, we grow a variant of the turkey crow bean, but eventually the variant will have its own name, and then it will have its own variants later as they mutate. I've noticed over my 50 years with it of observing it somewhat intensively that mutations are a fact of life. It gives new meaning to the term God-given, and I tend to name my mutant beans and tomatoes after the local landmarks, Rope Mountain, Pilot Knob, Basin Mountain, and I just give them the names of the local landmarks around here. A lot of them in the past were named after the women who discovered them, and most of the earlier discoveries, I think, took place with women because women tended to be the seed savers much more than men. Men were bringing in the meat and the larger crops, and women were very much into the gardening. That's why I think most of them have women's names. Although some of them are named, for example, the goose bean is named after the wild goose, which the original ones were collected from the craw of the wild goose. So you have goose beans, sometimes called goose craw beans, sometimes called goose neck beans, and they're known throughout the southern Appalachians. And the turkey craw bean is the same thing. But others are named after birds. The wren's egg bean and the partridge head or patridge head bean, which is very common in south central Kentucky. And when people order beans from us, I can almost tell you if they're from out of state in northern states, I can almost tell you where they migrated from by the beans that they order. There's a lot of cultural manifestations in this. West Virginians tend to order the Logan Giant or the Fat Man bean. North Carolinians will order the Lazy Wife bean, the Doris Chambers Greasy Cut Short, and things like that. It's a real study. Somebody could get a good dissertation out of this.
Absolutely. Well, you cover a lot of interesting things in the book, history of seed saving, and then I love the profiles of the different people and photographs. Obviously, you've done a lot of traveling to put this book together.
6 years of it in my spare time. This was in addition to raising all my own crops and selling them at farmers markets.
It's important work, and thank you very much for being here today to talk about it.
You're very welcome.
I've been speaking with Bill Best. He's the director of the Sustainable Mountain Agriculture Center and the author of Saving Seeds, Preserving Taste, Heirloom Seed Savers in Appalachia. It's a new book published by Ohio University Press. For more information about Bill, the activities and seeds for sale at the center, and his book, please visit our website, wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, this is Robin Carey-Allgaier.